Welcome to the Diary of a Daddy-O podcast, brought to you by myself, David Powell. On this podcast, I'll be talking to a number of daddy-os who are trying to juggle their respective jobs and ever-growing duties as a father. We will be discussing the ups, the downs, and everything in between. We want you to come along on the ride with us. So without further ado, welcome to the Diary of a Daddy-O.
This is a diary pod about how work routines flip, turn upside down, and we'd like to take a second to let you know how we juggle being a dad while being a CEO. Daddy-o.
Welcome to A Diary of a Daddy-o. We are on episode 7 of series 2. I am joined by Connor Martin today, serial entrepreneur, new father, and sadly a Man United fan on Derby weekend. So we'll be talking maybe a little bit about football, but we won't bore everyone that doesn't like football too much. We'll get stuck into work life and dad life more than football. But floor's yours, mate. Give us a little background on yourself, your work life, and your family setup as it stands.
Yeah, 28, new father to two little boys, who unfortunately will be two United fans as well, hopefully. but yeah, we've owner founder of the Essence Vault, which is our biggest brand. Just recently hit 2 million orders. We've been going since just before COVID. So we started, I say we, it was me in the bedroom. If you sound we, it sounds more professional, you know. Started the bedroom up in September 2019. Sort of intro to the Essence Vault was we focused on in-person markets, you know, your Sunday markets that you would go to, and you know, town center sort of thing. Done them for the first sort of four months. Had the website, but if you pull up that time machine thing and seeing the first version of the website, you wouldn't really call it a website, you know.
You catch your breath.
Yeah, it was like one of them old Argos catalogs that didn't make sense. Done that, the website wasn't really a focus. And then sort of come February time, we started putting a bit of effort online and pushed on from there. And obviously the end of the world happened in March, which obviously scared us quite a lot. And we we transitioned to full online from that March onwards. And I think we had a little bit of an email list built up from sort of January time, and we shut the store for we closed the website for 4 days, thinking, you know, that online businesses weren't allowed to sort of continue trading and stuff. Opened the website 4 days later, sent an email, and I think we got 3 months worth of orders in an hour. So hired all the friends and family and pressed on from there, and it's been a very very fast, what, 3 years, 4 years, 3 years? Since now we are, as I said, just hit 2 million orders in the UK. We've launched in US, Europe, and we've transitioned ourselves into sort of a group structure, similar to sort of a profit first, the Hut Group. We have no intentions of IPOing or anything like that. So we've got 5 brands under the umbrella now. And yeah, I think 270 employees. Which is, yeah, as you can see by the bags under the eyes, there.
I thought it was in the mirror, mate. I thought that was my bags looking right back up.
But yeah, so that's it.
270 employees in 4 years from starting in your bedroom. That's pretty impressive. Did you think back then that it was possible? Did you sort of dream big?
No, do you know why? Quite recently, a lot of people have sort of asked that question, and I never did. It was always, you know, we never had any, and I'm sure our CFO will agree, we still don't have any long-term plans. You know, it's sort of a projection look in the next 12 months, but a really strong focus in the next quarter. You know, so everything's based around right now. And that's always been, I'm pretty much, I get it from my dad, but I'm a very, probably one of the only pessimists sort of in this space, where, you know, I'm always focused on short-term. And I think, you know, that's been a sort of blessing in disguise.
I guess obviously the speed at which I mean, just talking Essence Vault alone, the speed at which that grew through COVID and then into like the next 2 to 3 years, it's probably not the worst thing to be nimble and agile. I think things can change so quickly in the e-commerce game that you can be winning one day and the next day things completely change. So, I mean, not having too big a goal is probably quite a smart thing to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
I guess I've been a customer of the Essence Vault after our first ever bet back in, I think, about 2 years ago when it was a Derby Day bet as well, wasn't it, I think? But quite a few people I know, Essence Vault customers as well, and everyone absolutely loves it. So, I mean, like, if anyone's listening and wants to try it out, we will put it in the comments.
Absolutely. And stuff like that, so yeah, with discount code and stuff.
Yeah, it's brilliant. I mean, I absolutely love it. I use it all the time. It's fantastic. I guess you mentioned briefly that you transitioned into a group structure. Is that something from a business perspective that you're looking to sort of grow more brands, or is it a case of using the skill sets you've got? I know you work with a couple of people I know as well, like Ollie, and
yeah,
very, very like driven in terms of content, social. It's something that you guys have done really well at the Essence Vault.
Yeah, I mean, it's a two-pronged thing. Again, it's that pessimist thing where, you know, if we have 5 or 6 brands, we protect ourselves. And, you know, if, you know, is there a downturn in a certain trend, or do a certain niche of customers no longer have that buying power, or their buying habits change, we need to ensure that we are protected that way. On the other side, it was sort of a reflection point on, you know, not from an egotistical point of view, but seeing other founders and other avenues on Twitter, even other you know, Instagram ads and websites, and thinking, you know, this isn't actually that hard to do. And you're looking at different aspects and thinking, Jesus, we could definitely do that a little bit better, or we could do it different. I'm a very, very big believer of Virgil Abloh's sort of, he said it really strong in the 3% rule. Whereas all you need to do is to change something by 3% to sort of give the new benefits and the new sort of drive to a customer base. And we do that across all of our products, MPDs, ads, everything. It's a big philosophy here. And then, yeah, as you mentioned, the sort of the team we have, it affected me quite a lot early on, because we got burnt left and right. Every agency we went to work with and stuff like that had their weak points. Some of them within the journey have been fantastic, but yeah, once we met Soar with us and Ollie, it's been night and day. You know, it's my strength is not so much brand development, but ideation and sort of a little bit of the in-person operations in terms of dispatch and fulfillment and things like that. But Ollie's phenomenal at bringing that to life. So it's pretty much like a comparable. You give him something to sell and he'll go and turn it into a successful route.
Fantastic. I only hear good things about Ollie and the guys at Soar.
I can tell you plenty of bad things as well, don't worry.
Maybe for a separate podcast, not the Daddy-O one. what was I going to say next? You have made it clear a few times, I've seen on Twitter anyway, that you have quite a lot of people sort of pretending to be the Essence Vault, or trying to copy and trying to like piggyback on your success. How do you deal with that, and how do you cope with that? Because I can imagine it's pretty frustrating when, obviously, during 3 or 4, we had the standard thing that happens for most fashion brands where Boohoo would copy your design and stuff, and there's not really a huge amount you can do about it. But
yeah, there's not. And do you know what? Like, I'm a big believer of do that competition. What's the saying? Rising sea lifts all boats. Do you know? So the more niche grows, it's a niche with. It's not like like mattresses where it's got such a long rebuy rate. Like, customers use this quite often, so they come to rebuy. Mm-hmm. So generally the competition is fruitful. More people that know about the niche will then come to understand that the Essence Vault makes up, you know, the Essence Vault's the most popular in the space, and that's brilliant. But yeah, it is frustrating when it's you know, when there is no sort of creative addition to someone's brand. You know, we've got one that's just renamed the Essence Vault, found a different name for Essence and a different name for Vault, and copied their bottles and website layout and the key offer. Like every single fragrance brand has the three pack as their hero offer. The three pack was ours. We we had back then, 3 years ago, Shopify had no apps or anything to develop bundles. So we had to, you know, we had to spend a lot of time to do that. Now, obviously, that's quite, you know, it's quite a, you know, an easy to do. You know, we can make an app in 10 seconds and get it on. But yeah, no real thought process. So it's frustrating because, you know, it's everyone's sort of learning off us, but at the same time, it helps the market. You know, we've went into the US, and the market for our sort of product is a lot less popular in the US. That's because there is only two main competitors over there, whereas we're going over there to then pay to develop the market. So CPAs are higher, conversion rates are lower, that sort of thing. So in the UK, we were quite lucky that there was a large, I'm going to call it fake perfumes in the UK. So like you go to the Saturday market and you get, you know, instead of Sauvage, you get Sausage, and it's from China, and you know, it burns your skin in the last 2 seconds. And that was the demographic of the UK. It was, you know, buy three bottles of perfume for £4, £5. And, you know, again, using that Virgil Abloh technique, is that's what we wanted to develop. We're like, right, well, there's clearly a market for this. The bigger brands are obviously frustrated because these people, the imports from China, are copying every single element in the bottle, so it's damaging their brand and things like that. But with us, when someone buys it, they know it's not the designer brand, and we don't try and pretend to be the designer brand. Mm-hmm. And if anything, we play into that sort of that customer buying journey of that luxury good to a great extent, because you know, you might go onto our website, buy 300ml bottles for £50, and say you buy, I don't know, Baccarat Rouge. Your first thought is going to be, oh shit, this is actually really, really good. But if the Essence Vault can do this for £25, imagine what the real one smells like for £200. Mm-hmm. Is it going to be 10 times better? It's not 10 times better, but it is definitely better. Do you know, they have a lot of expertise and experience, so it's going to be a better product. It's £200, of course it's going to be bloody better. So you're more likely to go in and buy that perfume now, and it means that them luxury brands don't have to give away free samples to get their product out there. We're doing that for them, and still making them relevant. Like if you look at the top 10 fragrances in the UK market at the minute, it represents our top 10. Now that's not to say we're the reason why fucking Dior's worth X amount of billions, but it proves that the having that sort of word of mouth about that product, it benefits them as well.
Have you ever had any of the so-called like big boys premium fragrances come at you from any legal point of view, any sort of like you need to stop doing this? I had a lad on the podcast last week who had a paying customer, Cristiano Ronaldo. He used one of his pictures for his sunglasses, and then he had a lawsuit dropped on him straight away saying you need to take these images down. And he was like, this is a paying customer. Have you ever had any sort of difficulties with the big boys?
We have, not so much the big boys, but we have had our fair share of issues. Yeah, don't get me wrong, it comes with any business. Do you know, and it is, I wouldn't say issues, I would say bullying. Do you know, any business gets, any business of any size gets quite a lot of bullying. But to be honest, we've been pretty fortunate in terms of expectations of you know what sort of challenges we have, but again, it goes back to that point where, you know, if you're sitting in their seat and they're seeing 20% raises month on month, or sorry, year on year of their revenues and their product developments, like, you know, are you going to go and say, actually, we want to take these guys down that are doing, you know, 2 million orders a year, whereas we're doing 2 million orders a day? I guess it's not really relevant, and there will be someone at that table that will say, actually, do you know what, they're taking away that Chinese fake import market. Joe, there's when I was growing up, every single market had the three person for a fiver, and it burnt their skin. And you know, obviously Manchester, Bury Road and stuff like that, like the perfumes are they're not as popular there because they're buying ours and they're buying our competitors, and that's brilliant. So it's sorting their problem out for them. There's I look quite often and the sort of trade and standards reports and things like that on the you know, the fake clothes and stuff like that. But that's all it is now, is fake clothes. It's very rarely perfumes. Whereas 10 years ago, it was usually all perfumes and a little bit of clothes. So it's I would say we come with definite positives to that market as well.
It's very interesting to hear that it's like fake clothes making a like lion share of that sort of knockoff market. I think it's in the is it Looks to Kill recently that got the investment from Dragon's Den, and this guy runs it, social media like Ben Gallagher, is it? He's doing a lot of talk at the moment about like fake luxury clothing and bags and how like sort of how hard it is to manage, I guess. What made you get into fragrances all those years back? Was it something that started for you personally at the beginning of COVID, or was it something you had interest in before?
Yeah, it was actually one of them. Back when I made the brand in just before COVID, I didn't think that it was. I just thought, I love perfume and I can't afford it. Let's make it. But obviously, once you get started and sort of once you are selling it and stuff, then memories do come back of sort of childhood and stuff. And you know, I was the twat in school that come in with a full bottle of perfume in their pocket, you know. So that I always loved fragrance. I always loved the sort of additions it brought. You know, I loved the compliments. I loved, you know, having no one that I smelt well or etc. I had a big sweat problem in school. I fucking hate it wearing school shirts. So always wanted to make sure I smelled good, and that sort of have one fucking do one of them like core memories. It was mixing my dad's old dupe and the CK1 in a cereal bowl, mix them together, and then pouring them back in the bowl. So it does come from childhood and stuff, but not necessarily the reason I made the brand, but they came back once I did.
It's mad. It's good to hear that you had that sort of interest in that backstory to being interested in fragrances at school. I was exactly the same as that. I used to carry around aftershave in my pocket. I had a problem at school as well. So like, why I didn't go down that route, I don't know. But yeah, you're doing pretty well with it, I guess. Moving slightly on to sort of maybe like the fatherhood side of things. I know you said you've got two sons, isn't it?
Yeah, two sons, Mason and Carter.
Two sons. United fans, I've seen the shirts on Instagram and stuff already, which is unfortunate for them. But how old are they now, sorry?
They 5 months tomorrow.
Five months. How have you found that first 5 months? Is it what you expected fatherhood to be like, or?
Yeah, obviously our sort of journey with kids and stuff, pretty open about it. We had IVF trying for quite a while, and wasn't lucky, but we had IVF, and obviously thankfully it worked first time. There was only one egg implemented, so obviously only expecting a single. Again, it was quite a roller coaster of a journey. We had the first scan, one heartbeat, perfect. Second scan, one heartbeat. And third scan, we had my wife had a bit of trouble and went in for an emergency scan, obviously expecting the worst, and sort of, you know, go into the room and, you know, all you sort of, yeah, it's one of these ones where it was one of them private scan houses, so you pay £30, you go in and quite quickly. But the first two times it was younger nurses, but this time it's an older sort of nurse, so you're thinking they're thinking it's sort of miscarriage as well, and that was obviously quite scary. But but what felt like 2 hours into the scan, five minutes into the scan, she says the question, I take it you are expecting twins. So as you can expect, I had a few swear words to say in her direction, in shock. But yeah, and then sort of it was MCDA twins, so same sac, different placentas or something like that.
Big news! We've decided to partner up with a charity called Winston's Wish. They were the first UK's child bereavement charity and have been supporting grieving children and young people for 30 years. The Diary of a Daddy-O would like to help them on their way in providing the much needed money to help provide specialist child bereavement support services across the UK. To donate, visit our Just Giving page, www.justgiving.com/diaryofadaddyo, or click the link in our description below. Now back to the podcast.
So it was very high risk, and they came very early. They came at 30 weeks, okay. which was sort of a difference in the usual pregnancy journey. So they came at 30 weeks, and the hospital we were supposed to deliver at, they didn't have any beds. So it was madness. We Thursday night, the consultant says, look, we need to emergency deliver these tomorrow, C-section, yada yada yada. You know, you'll be staying overnight and deliver in the morning. 5 minutes later, I book a hotel beside the hospital, and 5 minutes later he comes back and says, no, you're getting transferred to a hospital a mile away, because there's no beds here. That was okay, went on, booked a hotel for that hospital. 5 minutes later, he comes back in and says, shit, they don't have any beds either. You're going down to Dublin for birth. Now, Dublin is technically a separate country from Northern Ireland. We had to travel down by ambulance, 3 hours travel, got there half nine at night, got checked in and stuff. And then the next afternoon, the two boys were born. We spent 10 days down there in ICU, NICU, and then back up here. We spent 4 weeks in one hospital, then got transferred to another hospital for a further 4 weeks. So they wow. spent their first sort of 10 weeks in hospital, just on breathing apparatus, obviously very early. One of them had infection at birth, so he had to have a few runs of antibiotics, but they are thriving now and they're absolutely huge. So it's
oh really,
it's completely different. Yeah,
that's an incredible story. Fair play and hats off to you and your partner as well for going through that.
No, I appreciate it.
How did you cope? Do you have like a close sort of network of people that you could lean on at that point from a father perspective, like you have in business? You've got the lads from Solarverse, you've got a big leadership team at your Jack group and stuff. How did you cope with sort of going through all that process so like unexpectedly? Did you have people to help you?
Yeah, I mean, obviously I'm a big family man, so my father, my brother, Ryan and my dad, so you know, I have quite a strong network there. But obviously, as you can expect, it's, you're going through something that no one goes through, do you know? So mm-hmm. it is quite difficult, frustrating and things like that, because you're almost saying to yourself, you know, why do I deserve this? But you know, it's all about the positives. And you know, we still had two baby boys that were, albeit under, you know, in little pods with 40 different wires hanging out of them. So it's emotional, it's frustrating, and you know, in certain NICUs you're not allowed any family members. You only need to see them certain hours of the day, but that becomes relaxed as the weeks went on. So yeah, it was obviously it was a big emotional journey, especially being down in Dublin, because you are 3 hours away from anyone. But my family traveled down and stuff and came to see us.
Now, how did you cope with business as well? I guess if you were 3 hours away from your like headquarters and everything going on at work, how did you manage to deal with that and switch off to be present for the little ones and
yeah,
family?
I mean, it was difficult, but again, credit to Ollie and Seamus, our CFO, and you know, Ryan, brother, and the rest of the team. Like it's you know, we cracked on as standard. Do you know, it was you know, we dropped a few things. You know, MPD sort of slid off. You know, we didn't release any new products in Q4, but we still had the best 3 months that we've ever had. So it was a sort of hats off to them that they were able to sustain that. You know, at the same time, I wasn't allowed in to the hospital for periods of the day, so I was able to do a wee bit on the laptop and stuff, but nothing too crucial.
So I guess that was about 5 minutes into now, fatherhood. Are you seeing development stage? Like my Brody's now 15 months old, so like when I try and think back to the stages of
it's hard.
That Brody's development and childhood, it's crazy to think like what was he doing at 5 minutes now? It's really difficult. Like how are you enjoying it at the moment? What's going on?
Yeah, I am enjoying it massively. It's been we've been quite lucky to have that sort of support network around us, and things like that. But I think they're at the stage now where, you know, they recognize you and they're smiling and they're reacting to singing United songs to them. So and they're lifting their heads and stuff. So it's really good. Yeah. Really enjoying it. I think sort of because we had been, I've always wanted kids, so everything that I do in work is sort of for them anyway. So, you know, in my eyes I've sort of been a father for a longer time because I've been doing things for them anyway. Do you know? So yeah. It's been as expected, a little bit more tired than I thought. But yeah, everything's still going good. We obviously they actually got out of hospital on Black Friday. That was a massive not stress, it was a massive day. Yeah, it's been great. Yeah,
it's mad. Like, I think that's when Brody was born. He was born on the 28th of November, which
Black Friday sort of thing. Yeah.
I think it might have been Saturday after Black Friday, like 2 a.m. It's what I mean. Like, it was a year and a half ago, and I'm now without sitting here thinking exact dates, but it was pretty much on Black Friday, and I was like, how is this going to work and stuff? But again, like at the time, 3 or 4, I had a really good Black Friday, best one ever, and things just seem to, I think all the hard work you put in prior to these sort of events, it's shown when you take a little step away, even if it was, like you said, for a couple of days or a week or whatever. But it's wild. Will they be watching the game at the weekend?
They will hopefully be watching the full game. If we get slaughtered, it might be turned off.
I took Brody to his second City game last week, 2 weeks
Did
ago
you?
Now.
It's not too loud.
Plenty of space for him to run around and have all the empty seats. He has his own little section, but it was incredible. Like, for me personally, like, it's, I remember my wife saying to me, like, oh, if he likes football, that's fine. If he doesn't, it's his own decision. Like, I fully agree with that, but I've been waiting for like 35 years to take, hopefully, if I had a son or a daughter, whichever it may have been, but to the football, because, like, I just remember going with my dad when I was younger, and I spoke about it on this podcast already, like my drives up to Manchester from Birmingham with my dad for a couple hours in the car, like some of my favourite times, just chatting about, can't even remember what it is now as a young lad, but just talking about whatever and feeling comfortable and having a good time. Like, I would love to be able to sort of have those experiences with Brody in the future and just driving up to the game, watch the game, come home, talk again for another 2 hours about life, football, whatever it may be. And just, it was a lovely experience to take into second
all of,
game.
All of them, 115 charges.
Well, we could, plenty to talk about, isn't there? Plenty of things to talk about. Hopefully they'll be dropped by the time we know what's going on anyway.
Yeah.
Or we'll be back in the conference.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. That was the exact same with me. You know, sort of a lot of them core memories were traveling over the United games. Obviously being Northern Ireland, we got to, you know, one or two every season, which was fantastic, and that they were sort of my best times through childhood and stuff. So it was I'm looking forward to bringing them over, hopefully with a bit of success.
Yeah, well, it's turning now, isn't it, for United? Now you're stealing everyone's leadership group. You're plucking the best from everywhere. But no, I mean, from a football perspective, I think it's the right thing for United to do. They're sort of doing a little bit like what Newcastle did on the field. They're picking Premiership proven leaders, whether that be the Man City, CFO, the Newcastle, and plug them in, and hopefully they all work together and get United back to where they were before.
Yeah, I mean, it's frustrating to watch week in, week out, and obviously we're still not playing the best, but yeah, we've finally got something a bit more excited about, and it's nice that it's not, you know, like this marquee signing, you know, like it's not a Pogba or a Casemiro, or, you know, it's foundational, you know, it's nice to have someone that's doing interviews and talking about, you know, that I know it's probably not up to the fans, but, you know, at least involving the fans in the rebuild of Old Trafford and things like that. So it's nice to not feel involved, like, but I mean, it's nice to know what's going on, and it's not just day after day Mason Greenwood being on the front page rather than the back page.
It's mad. Like, United, from the outside perspective, obviously being a City fan, Everton looks so easily fixed. You need a new stadium. You need a leadership group. You need to start buying players like Declan Rice rather than Paul Pogba. It all looks so simple, yet United just kept doing the total opposite. And it, like for me, I'm enjoying it. Like it's like United were when Man City were terrible, making terrible decisions, buying Rubinho and stuff like that. But it's crazy to think how long it's taken for United to get themselves sorted. And I think like Gary Neville touches on it all the time about businesses making the wrong decisions and having the wrong people in the wrong seats. Yeah. And I think it's true in any size business. If you've got the wrong people in the wrong seats, they'll just keep making the wrong decisions based on.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Man City is a perfect example for us. Do you know, it is all football is a commercial. It's a commercial vehicle. It's finance has to flow through it, but it's so much easier to make the right decisions than it's almost we have. It's the standard thing of you know, having an exam, and instead of preparing for it for two or three weeks before, we wait until the evening of. Do you know, we wait for, you know, we could sign Anthony for 30 million, then all of a sudden we wait until the final week of the transfer window and sign him for triple that. And that just seems to be a repeat. You know, Pogba was a panic signing. You know, it's always seemed to be panic after panic where, you know, like the likes of Kobe Mane and a few other players that are coming through, like Kambala at centre back and stuff. Like it seems so simple. Just, you know, spend a tenth of that money on developing these kids, and yeah, then go and sign, you know, a United fan that's playing for, you know, a sort of lower league team in Spain or etc., and sort of have people that aren't on triple every other player, you know. And it's obviously frustrating to watch because yourself as well, you're in business, you know how to make it work. Well, you try to make it work, and you see it being done so wrong for years on end at United.
Have you ever had any tough experiences with bringing in maybe the wrong person into one of the businesses and thinking, oh God, this is a big error, and try to rectify it quickly?
Oh yeah, absolutely, yeah. It's one of them. We try a lot of our management team and things like that have came through from the bottom of the business. Do you know, we've hired, or we haven't hired, one of the production managers. He started on 25 hours a week 2 years ago, and now he's the head of production. Ryan, my brother, he packed orders in the bedroom, and he's the leading supply chain, and that's flew the whole way through the business. But don't get me wrong, we have made wrong hires in the past and things like that, but I like to think at the minute we've rectified a lot of them. We hired a lady from who was head of operations at Roy Mail in one of their districts, and you know, she's coming on board as our COO and completely changed a lot of the a lot of the dynamics of the business that you know, maybe 50% of them I knew of, and I knew that needed fixed, and then the other 50% is her ideas and her changes and implementations and what she changes, and that, you know, she's only been here two and a half months and you know, completely changed the game. But that's 50% a pat on the back for her and 50% pat on the back for all of the staff. You know, because you can't make changes in 2 months unless the staff that's here are exquisite and real assets to the business, and you know, out of the 270, you know, they're all fantastic.
That's brilliant. I bet that's a when you sort of sit back at the end of the year, if that's what you do, like give you like a sense of pride that people are being promoted from the bottom up. As much as like the revenue's amazing, and like you said, you've done two million orders, like those sort of seeing people progress, it's a really nice thing to see, isn't it, and be a part of.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's again, going back to that United thing, it's so simple to do. In certain aspects, not at the time, but when you're reflecting back, you're thinking like, you know, why didn't I do that sooner? Or, you know, why was I even thinking about doing that rather than just doing it? Like, even things like we have a canteen in-house. Everyone pays 60 quid. They get breakfast and lunch every day. But, you know, and for me, that's like, it's a very simple thing to do. I done it from a point of laziness. I didn't want to have to go to the shop and get sandwiches or whatever. I just wanted it here. But then certain staff maybe send you a text after being here for a few months and being like, you didn't know that's completely changed the dynamics of the financials of our household, because I don't have to worry about paying for food at 60 quid and it's done. And I can spend, you know, I can spend money on the kids. And one of them was quite emotional and was like, you know, I wasn't able to get my kid the PE outfit from school because it was 200 quid and they were going in and you know, getting picked on because they were wearing the wrong color of socks, which is madness that that sort of thing has to happen. But at the same time, it just re-engages everything that we do. And, you know, not one of our, every single staff member is on the national, is above the national living wage, even at 16, where the minimum wage is what, 670, you know, everyone gets paid 12 and above, well, going up to 12 in April. But again, that's such an easy thing to do. But in most businesses, them 16-year-olds are being paid peanuts, but doing the same job and expectations of doing more than the initial staff for no reason. You know, they're working the same hours, they're doing the same output, and you know, it's mind blowing. And there's people wonder why, you know, there is a lot of crime in the streets and stuff like that. You know, these kids are fucking stealing because if they do want to work, they're getting a fiver. You know, and it's again, it's an easy fix. If these kids have a proper income, and I say kids, like they're grown adults at 16, like they know what they're doing, to most degrees, definitely in the workplace. But you know, that they don't have to worry about that. They don't have to. You know, some of these people have broken households. You know, they can't get these resources, or they haven't got an aspect of appreciation because, you know, and things like that. They can't go to football training because you know, they've got no transport, or they've got no football kit or whatever. And it seems like very minuscule things, but these all add up to build a person's character. And you know, if this person's sitting in the house doing naff all because they can't afford the new Xbox or the new FIFA or that sort of thing, then they're not engaging with their friends, do you know? And that just spirals out of control. But if it's fixed early on, it's 50 quid, it's 100 quid, and it completely changes that dynamic.
I bet when you, like you said at the beginning, when you were sort of making fragrances back in your house, you didn't expect to be having this sort of positive impact on so many people. You've got 270 staff. If that helps, every person, their whole household, it's incredible what you're doing at Yes and Fulton with that group, and you should be really proud of.
I think it sort of again, it came from a personal reason. It was in my old employment. You know, I knocked my fuck in, you know, 60 hours plus a week. And you know, I left there quite sore. You know, I wasn't appreciated. You know, I was doing the job role of someone four times the salary and stuff like that. And we sort of, after sort of the COVID craze and stuff, and I looked and we had what, 30, 40 staff, I sort of sat them down and said, right, well, you know, what did you hear about your old job? What did you hear? Why have you came here? Why have you chosen to stay here rather than go back to your job? And then sort of collated that full list of things and be like, right, these are our benchmarks. These are the things that we want to try and change. And it's simple things like it's you know, being paid on time. It's being in a warm workplace. It's the toilets being clean. You know, and it's, again, it's, you know, there's councils and governments here to make sure them things happen in a workplace, and that's not happening. that's, you know, it's all a build-up of simple fixes that, again, aren't actually that financially motivating, do you know?
Yeah, no, I fully appreciate it. And I mean, we're literally just closing in the 40 minutes now, and I've seen someone tapping on the door, so I won't keep you for much
longer. Don't worry, I've got time.
I'll ask you, I ask every guest on here, if there was one piece of advice that you weren't told prior to having your twins that you could give to a dad, a future dad, what would it be? I might put you on the spot a little bit there, but what advice would you give to?
Don't don't listen to everyone's advice. Just do it your way. I don't think there's no expectation. It's very simple at times. It does get overwhelming and it does get hard. But I think if you listen to everyone's advice, it's sometimes unwarranted and it comes from their current frustrations rather than the birth. And I think it's if we sort of made the point of, you know, even if having twins, everyone stops you in the street and like, oh, twins, you know, and then they give you their snippet of advice and you're like, fuck off, do you know, that's that sort of thing. And if you did worry, like one, we had one, we always go to this cafe on a Sunday morning and you know, one of them, oh, what age are they? And you're 4 months, and they goes, oh, they're not lifting their heads yet. And you're like, I don't care. Do you know, I don't care if they're, for a start, they're 4 months old, but they're 2 months correct. Do you know, they're only really 2 months old. It's a place of worry and stuff like that. Just don't listen to it.
I had that same piece of advice from an old school friend just before we uploaded. It was like, my advice to you is don't listen to anyone else. And like, at the time, I was like, surely you want to take advice from people? He's like, everyone's journey is different. Everyone's parenting style is different. You can lean on Google if you need to ask like something that you really need some advice on. But everyone's coming from a position, like you said, where they've had an experience that's either positively or negatively clouded their experience and their sort of advice. It's good.
One more, because it helped me massively. We paid GP, obviously NHS is a bit of a mess. We paid for a private GP, £30 a month. You can see him at an hour's notice and phone call, email. And you know what? And it goes with that like tiredness aspect. If something's wrong with your baby and things do, you know, you don't have to spend 12 hours in NE because there's an issue. You go to him for an hour or for 15 minutes and you're reassured and now you've saved yourself a night's sleep. So that's a big one.
I could have done without advice. Brody had chicken pox. I think he was 4 months old, so quite young to have chicken pox.
Yeah.
We were back into to A&E with like, there's a chicken pox closer to his eye, there's one on his lip, and we were just constantly panicking and spent hours in A&E that maybe could have been avoided if we'd done this podcast. Yeah.
But no, that's probably my number one nugget is it's been the best. I'm sure he's sick of us, like, because we see him every week, but
it's see dog on Slack.
It was money well spent.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, mate, I will leave it there. I really appreciate you jumping on, mate, and talking about work and business.
No, and likewise, thanks for having me.
Really appreciate it. Good luck for the weekend.
I'm not going to say good luck to you for the weekend. We need it more than you.
I'll be there, mate. So if all goes well, mate, I'll send you a picture on Sunday.
Have a day. All right.
Appreciate it, mate. All the best. Speak to you soon.
Take care. Bye bye.
A work-life balance so hard to do while juggling a business and date nights too. But life goes on, so what baby we got? Now I'm trying to juggle work while feeding baby that bop. I deal with one dirty nappy and turn my back and hear 101 messages pinging through Slack. Sleep deprivation, you can see it in my eyes. As I hop on Google Meets, I hear the baby starts crying. So I mute and shout to mom, you okay in there, dear? She says, get on with your work, we'll be okay in here. I wash up the bottles around 8 or 9. By the time I'm in my office, sometimes it's lunchtime. Looked at my partner, said, one day I'll know how to juggle my new life as a successful daddy-o.